With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Prepare at last his return. Your behavior our Savior deserves. I'll save you in the end, my friend.
Hello, you are listening to Tribulation Farce, a Left Behind podcast. I am your host, Tim Lanning, and this is Jennifer Cheek. Jennifer, how are you today?
Well, we are broadcasting live from the Lake of Fire. It is hot as fuck in St. Louis. It is 100 degrees, and personally, I hate it.
Yeah, I took the recycling out just now, and I grabbed on the wrong area. So some old syrupy,
rancid beer juice
just hit my finger. So,
well, you're already stronger and braver than me, because I've literally not stepped my foot outside today, and I shan't. Yeah. I cannot handle the heat, which was part of the reason why when I was a child, I was like, I can't go to hell. It's hot there.
I mean, yeah, that was a big reason to become a Christian, really. I'm very thankful that I didn't really grow up around what was described as fire insurance.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. But then also, wasn't it like in medieval times, there was a concept of hell being very cold? Mm-hmm. Now that I'm interested in.
Yeah. And then learning later that, like, hell's not in the Bible.
Yeah, exactly. That's real fun. The Lake of Fire is talked about, which is different.
Yeah.
Well, probably will come up in this series at some point, actually.
Yeah, Jesus goes to hell at one point, I think, if you're Catholic.
He does. He goes there.
And that really messes me up. Also, all babies are in heaven right now if you're Catholic. Like, now. Like, all babies and future babies. Baby souls
but
are
wait,
in
heaven. I thought they were in purgatory.
Okay, that might be true,
I
too.
I think that they die when they're... When
all
they're
I know before. Is my stepmom was talking to a newborn, and he's like, you were in heaven just a little bit ago. I was like, whoa.
Wait. So she thinks that before you're born, you're in heaven?
That's my understanding.
I don't know. Do Christians... Is that normal? I don't know if that's a normal belief.
I'm going to go ahead and assume it's a Lutheran thing. This week, we are talking about... Chapter 4 of the very first book of Left Behind.
And chapter 5,
thank you. This is our third episode. Thank you so much for everyone who's downloading, enjoying it.
Yes.
Got a lot of, nice comments and things like that. Shout out to Kristen for the DM and hello to Jack and all your whole family for listening.
It's hell yeah, man. We should catch up sometime.
Yeah. It's always good making something like this and then folks you went to college with or
oh my god,
high school
yeah,
with
yeah.
or what have you. Like
being like, yeah,
hell
we
yeah,
love
let's
this
go.
Shit.
I mean, we have pastors that give us their sign of approval.
Yeah. I mean, the people crave Tribulation Farce.
We've had our first one-star review. Praise be. Did you ever notice, Jennifer, that it's like okay to make fun of Christians, but if you did it to like Muslims or Jewish people.
It's so hard for them. Being the dominant religion in this country and the one that's ruining our country. It's so hard.
People do wars for religion. Okay? we watched Under the Banner of Heaven and we might do a bonus episode.
Oh man,
on that.
We have to. It was so good.
But I have decided, everyone, you know, we were trying to be nice, but I have decided that religion should be illegal.
It's really bad. I finished reading the book Under the Banner of Heaven, which ends with the trial of which, if you don't know anything about it, a few fundamentalist Mormon extremists killed their sister-in-law and niece in 1984. And as part of the trial, there was a whole thing where they were trying to be like, well, he's delusional and is not of his right mind because of these religious beliefs. And they're like, well, but if you say that, then that means every person who's religious is not fit to, you know, to be trial. And I was like, Much to think about. Well, then. Anyway, I'm not trying to be a hater for every single religious person out there. Like, if you're nice and whatever,
Some of my best friends are Christian. Yeah.
I just will never stop making fun of evangelicals because I hate the evangelical church. I don't care.
Cool Christians know you're not making fun of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, I know, but, you know, Jesus, he talks to me. He says it's okay to cuss. I can drink whiskey and have sex before marriage and I don't exist and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, Jennifer, any other things that you want to, you know, any prayer requests?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm sure.
I have a few unspoken, personally.
Yeah, my number one prayer request is for it to be less hot in St. Louis. It's too hot for me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, very weak.
We knew that this was going to be the major downside of moving here.
I can't wait to not leave my home for the next week.
Yeah. Well, just in case to any new listeners, Jennifer and I were raised evangelical for 20 years. So you can't yell at us. That's the rule.
You can't.
That is the rule.
If you want to yell at us, Jesus said, turn the other cheek, my good bitch. So go ahead and turn it.
All right. Chapter four.
I can feel you gearing up and I had to join. So we start with the Buckster and he is getting the Rapture Special, which is a doctor treating his head wound.
Yeah, this
that he got from being a fucking idiot and going down the fucking slide wrong.
These chapters aren't very fun.
They're not.
They're quite depressing.
Yeah.
And if you can put yourself in the mode of, okay, this is just evangelical, the stand, you can kind of.
Oh, yeah. See, totally. And I actually found myself getting actually interested in the all the cars are stuck here,
right.
And, the power lines are down, and, you're trying to, get places.
And even discussing the fact that so we find out either this chapter or next chapter that the rapture most likely happened at 11 p.m. Central Time.
So midnight Eastern?
Midnight Eastern, and I don't know how much ahead Israel is. Germany's 6.
Yeah.
Add another 6, probably.
Yeah. Maybe not. I don't know. It was during the daytime. I think we can agree on that.
So there is this concept of okay, it's not as bad in Chicago because it happened at 11.
At nighttime.
But, you know, Ray Ray's daughter, Chloe, is in California.
Right.
Where it happened at, 9. So it seems like it's much more dangerous out there because of that.
Also, my brain just put together that if the rapture happened at midnight on the East Coast, God basically made it so that there was really almost nowhere that it was happening during the daytime because the time zones where it was nighttime, that's the ocean, right? Do you see what I'm saying? The time zone chunk, where people would have been really deep asleep, all that area doesn't really have people. It's the ocean.
That's a great point, and that kind of rocks.
It's fucked up. It's fucked up. It's even more vindictive.
Big old JOD is how can I get the most amount of people,
absolutely blast as many people as I can.
He knew that he could probably do it at certain times to blast individual peoples, but he wanted it to be a per capita thing.
Yeah, he wanted the most blast per capita. So anyway, this doctor is a cool guy, and I don't think he ever shows up again, but I did like him because he made Buck be in pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good to me when he was just Buck up, bro. It'll be better than the infection on your head. And they have a whole weird conversation with one of the what do you call the area? The fancy people who have a fancy airplane.
Yeah, just the
access.
The premium.
The lounge. He's everyone is being so condescending and rude to women in this series all the time for no reason.
We can agree that it would suck to be anyone in the rapture, but it would really suck to be a female service worker.
Oh my fucking God.
Listen here, bitch. I am Bucky Williams. I am 19 years old, and I crack stories, and I was on my way to see Dirk Burton.
Seriously, the doctor is go hand out peanuts and whatever. I'm bitch, who are you?
I mean, we've said it before. It's just that it's still funny, and I cannot believe no one says, listen, toots, how about you shut your app?
I mean, they basically do. Like, there's a lot of, like, Huns and deers and
sweethearts.
Sweet cheeks. I don't know if they say sweet cheeks.
Listen,
but
beautiful. Why don't you get me a frickin' sandwich?
That's what it's like. But anyway, Buck gets his head cleaned, unfortunately, and he finally gets access to the phone to find a message from, I'm going to quote this exactly, Steve Plank's secretary, the matronly Marge Potter, which, yeah. I mean, if you're coming up with a matronly name, Marge Potter, pretty spot
that
on.
That does whip. We are getting into, like, the really sick names.
There's a lot of, yeah, this chunk, we get to introduce quite a few people.
And basically, if you're not a cis white man, but I'm like, come on, it's 1995, this is a Christian book.
Yeah.
There's not going to be any trans people.
No, there's definitely not. And they also need to make sure that you know if the person's not white.
Yes.
They got to tell you.
I could see book 7 having a trans person that goes to like an all-you-can-eat pork buffet on the Temple Mountain Jerusalem
totally.
Besides that.
I don't even feel like Tim LaHaye, I'm sure he knows.
Now, what's a cis?
Yeah, I don't even want to think about that. So anyway, Buck gets the message from Marge Potter, and the only, real thing of note in it that made me laugh was that she says, everyone we know who's gone is either a child or a very nice person. Are you sure? Like, I'm sorry, but I don't find Christians very nice, I don't. I feel like actually things would get a lot quieter.
Again, this is 1995. Times were different-ish. Mm-hmm. Which is, obviously not true, but also very true. Because as we've joked about before, we live in an interesting time in 2022 where things are quite worse.
Oh, yeah.
Quite worse because so many of the things that are said silently forever are being said out loud, yada, right. yada, yada. Not trying to say that this is a new thing. Please don't read too deep into that.
No, but I do feel like generally, I feel like the economy was, better around this time. Like, people were just doing better.
Yeah, I think we were coming back from some sort of 80s badness, and we hit the point of, 90s swell.
And we weren't in the dot-com boom yet?
Yeah, I believe we have a couple years before we can get to that.
Yeah.
Don't correct me. This is a different world.
I feel like, unfortunately, I'm
actually, do correct me. I'm curious.
Yeah, no, please do correct us. And I have another question that's going to kind of come up in this vein for the next chapter, but maybe I need to go do some digging and, research, what was going on politically around 1995, 1994.
Because he doesn't say what
I don't know
year.
That. I don't know that, chunk of time as much. Like, I feel like I know old stuff, mm-hmm. and I know current stuff, and I don't know the 90s as much.
I mean, yeah, 90s kind of sucks, which is why it's weird that we are having some 90s fashion come back around now, and all our shows are coming back and things like that. I mean, there is somewhat interesting vibes of, a less glam, less nice, less interesting 80s, but, not really anything except for more of this excess type vibe. But they don't say what year this book or story takes place, and obviously it's in a different world.
Right. I mean, I would assume it's a similar time,
right.
mid-90s.
Because we're getting all the stuff based off the technology, and I don't really know how much of this technology was forefront in 95, and you're supposed to think that Bucky is, slick shit.
I think you are supposed to think that he's slick shit for constantly, freaking whipping his laptop out and trying to connect it to, a phone. It is really funny to, think about, a lot of the things that are happening in these chapters, would not happen in current time because people have cell phones.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if this was written nowadays, it would just be, there's the cell towers are down.
Yeah, true,
true,
still
be
true.
The same thing.
True.
And then there'd be some sort of comment about, well, everyone's so used to their phone, they didn't even know what their phone numbers were and how to get home.
That's probably true, though. I really only do know, 2 phone numbers saved, so that's actually a good point.
Yeah.
So maybe it'd be the same.
But one thing I liked about this chunk is that we have our first people basically being like, well, that was a rapture.
Yes. Yeah, the doctor, the doctor's like, it's a rapture special. Buck's like, wait, excuse me? What did you just say?
He's like, I sort of believe in a god.
I'm like a deist, if anything.
So, well, I would like to talk about this more. I was like, nah, I gotta go. I might show up in book 8. Bye.
I got more wounds to cleanse.
Basically, anyone who just shows up for a second, I'm like, this is probably my favorite
They're
character.
They're coming back. Well, I think the person you were talking about does come up.
He's the one that's mentioned?
I think so.
Yes!
We'll see. If it's who I'm thinking of.
I'm going to Google it.
Another thing that was really funny in this section, because this is all happening, Buck is just, trying to, use the phone and like he's in the lounge or whatever. And there's a whole thing about him being very excited to work on the assignment of a lifetime.
He's such a dork.
He's such a dork. And like just the concept of like investigative journalism about the Raptor is so funny to me.
Yeah.
Like all the think pieces and like what would Twitter be like if the Raptor
Wow, normal world.
What would Twitter be like on the day of the Raptor? Hashtag Raptor.
So fucking funny.
It would rule to be on Twitter.
Because people would lose their goddamn minds.
You know, there'd be
everyone would realize that Christians are real, so they would just go like ultra irony pilled. And then start doing, like, bits and jokes and shit like that. It would be sort of like the time when chat roulette was around and people would do stuff on that.
Just the Wild West on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. And immediately you would have all this disinformation. Reddit would find, like,
someone in Prague with a
weird radio tower that did it. And then they would accidentally get doxxed and, like, bricked to death.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like obviously, some people will be like, "Well, it's obviously the Rapture," but some people are going to be like, "It's aliens," or like, "It's a you know military weapon." Or well, the problem
that if the actual Bible Rapture happens nowadays, we're all going to go, "LOL, it's like the leftovers."
Exactly.
And then all the Christians up in heaven is like, "No, it's not like the leftovers.
It's not.
It's different."
Like honestly, okay, real talk. I'm gonna look you in your face. If the Rapture for real happened, what would you do? Like, would you be like, I guess I gotta be Christian again?
I guess I would have to become Christian again.
I don't think I would. I think I would be like, fuck you, send me to hell, bitch.
If I was saved.
I don't know. I might be a weenie, though. I don't know if I would actually do that.
I mean, my point is, saying right now, if God exists, he sucks. And I do believe
exactly.
that.
Exactly. I really believe that.
But that being said, I do not want to go to hell. So
hell sounds very bad. So I guess I would. But God,
if we
would
knew
know.
For sure that it was like the God Rapture, which if every Christian disappeared and shit like that, I would. I hate to think of it, but like I would have to just become a Christian, right?
I don't know if I could though. But I guess if I saw it was real, but it's not gonna happen.
It wouldn't be. So that's my thing. Is I want to have. I want to like bunker down, go into the basement with like all my Uncrustables and polar seltzers.
Yes. And come out 50 years later.
And then and be ironic for like 3 days. Have my own 3 days underground. Then I too will emerge and become born again. Because you would have to, because you know that the whole point is that like an airplane or the Antichrist or a fucking scorpion on a goddamn horse is going to kill you. At any given moment.
Yeah, that's true. So you gotta just say it, and you gotta say it enough that, like, God believes you.
The hardest part is going to be convincing, one, God.
I don't think God is gonna be fooled
by
me.
And then, two, me. I'm not too sure. I have to convince myself first, and then that way, but, like, I don't want to, like, sing, and I really don't want to go. I don't want to go to heaven, either.
No, that's really boring.
Heaven sounds bad. But then, actually, so... If you become saved and you survive the 7 years, you live for 1,000 years.
Now that's pretty cool.
As you don't go to heaven, heaven comes to you, and then after 1,000 years,
then you go up to heaven.
Everyone goes to heaven, or it's like new heaven, maybe. I think again, none of this shit is real.
So it
even
matter?
Like even well, I hesitate to say mainstream. What is mainstream anymore? But like definitely quote unquote huge swaths of. Christians, you know, not Catholic, Jesus believers.
Yes.
Believe in some form of end time stuff, but I don't think it's as many as I thought.
No, I think it's a lot less. I think the whole, because I mean, again, talking to our sister-in-law who grew up Luther is like, I don't know what you guys were talking about. And I'm like, what?
Well,
it's crazy to me.
That's just the taint of the Catholic Church. So you're Lutherans, you're Methodists. Not Christians. Catholics, obviously not Christians. So.
I would put a lot of blame for this on the Baptists. I think the majority, I think Baptists are like the biggest, they're definitely the biggest evangelical denomination and maybe like the biggest denomination in the United States. And they for sure believe in that.
I would be unsaved just long enough to rip any, like, of my family that said they are Christian a fucking new one. Weird. It's like, shut up. Don't God. Kill yourself, though. That would be like everyone else in this goddamn book.
That's the thing that sucks, though, in this universe, is that you've only got heaven or hell. So you can't just, like, kill yourself. You're just gonna take yourself there faster.
Right. But like I was saying, you have Earth heaven.
Yeah.
So you have to survive 7 years. Good luck.
But I think that's only if you're you're saved. I think it's...
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, right.
So, if you're... I would say I choose the option of not dying, becoming
living
saved...
Living 1,000 years.
Becoming saved and not dying, because I do not want to go to heaven early. Unless heaven's
so
different. It sounds so... I don't want to sing. I'm sorry.
Honestly, Tim, I think, unfortunately, heaven on earth is going to be kind of the same. That's the always the bye-bye guy, but I don't know.
Yeah, but, like... Think of it as, like, a non-problematic Mormon, right? Where it's like, I don't need coffee to smile and dance.
Oh, man, no way. I would dispatch myself quickly.
Jesus, I am Christian, but am I able to go to the void?
Like, yeah, if you just, like, shoot me out into space somewhere,
Saint
like
Peter
a different universe.
Sits you down. It's like, you're saying a lot of negative things about being in heaven.
Yeah. Are you willing to take some feedback about heaven? Fucking sucks here.
We're going to move you in the favela of heaven. If we had to build a fucking interstate through here.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah. Capitalism was invented by the Bible. Thank you.
Oh, my God. It's just going to be highways everywhere. And it's going to be like McMansions in heaven.
I think heaven is just a big cube, is what the Bible says. I want to talk about this.
I know,
more,
but we got to keep moving.
And I think this is potentially a fun topic for future guests and things like that.
Yes,
so
totally. Let's remember that. So anyway, meanwhile, Rafer is getting off of his non-horny helicopter and walking 5 miles home.
And again, the way they write everything is just so smarmy in a completely different way. Fucking Bucky has like big bottom energy and Rafer has like douchey dad energy about everything.
Yeah.
So he's like, I know what I'll do. I'll walk.
I'm gonna walk because I'm a hard worker.
He's just like,
I love to pull myself up by my bootstraps and walk down the road.
I got boots. These boots are made for walking and pulling up.
Walking 5 miles. But he does, he hitchhikes though, and he gets picked up by a nice lady. They have a little convo. And the only thing that the lady wants in return for giving Rafer a ride is for him to pray for her. Rafer's like, I don't really do that.
So we are getting, we're inching dangerously close to where it becomes explicitly religious.
Yes.
That being said, I did, you know, enjoy this back and forth. I thought,
yeah,
you know, because we are in the depression zone and we just moved away from Bucky, who we hate, and we regrettably stan Rayford, or at least I do. I don't, but compared to Bucky, it's like Yakuza Kiwami Zero. We're going back and forth.
Oh, right. Yes.
Kiryu is Rayford and Majima is Buck. Okay.
Oh man, I don't know if I feel good about that comparison.
Kiryu is Rayford. Himbo.
Majima. He deserves better.
He does deserve better, but on the Kiryu Majima Bucky Rayford special. And once we get more characters, we can figure out who else.
Too true.
I really did enjoy. I thought this was, if not well written,
It's engaging. It's engaging. Yeah. It is. Because again, it does have that, like you said, the stand vibe.
Right. If this was a movie, I would say the script was good, regardless of the acting. Right.
Yeah. It's like decent. I did laugh at the whole, like, when River's like, I'm not much one for praying. And the lady says, you will be. Extremely fucking what a Davy Jones in Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, you best be believing in nightmares.
Do you believe in a rapture story? You're in one.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what I would tweet.
It would really go viral, but unfortunately, you would still be destined.
No,
for
what would happen? Just like in real world, I would get like 30 likes and be like, Jennifer,
like,
what? Retweet it. I have so many good tweets. Why does this keep happening?
It's not taking off.
Yeah, and then I see other worst tweets go huge. Like, anyways.
That's how it is.
But yeah, then when he gets to his house after being dropped off, and they do an interesting thing about they kind of just, like, stop their viewpoints mid-chapter.
Yes.
And not what I would consider a traditional cliffhanger, right? But kind of. It's like two steps before a cliffhanger. Because it's in the middle of a chapter, you're gonna finish the chapter, so they don't need to.
Yeah. No, it's actually, reminds me of one of my favorite shows, Nirvana and Fire, which is a Chinese show, where they're telling like one story by flipping back and forth. It's like Nirvana and Fire, but like infinitely worse than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like they're pushing it along by continuing to go back and forth.
Not quite as queer as of yet. Let's see, though. We'll keep our mind open.
Oh, but, man. But again, I need to... No, sorry. Side note in talking about that. I think I'm going to absolutely be digging into it at some point. As well as the fanfiction situation, for Left Behind. I was trying to confirm a thing, and I stumbled across a fanfiction.net fanfiction. It wasn't all horny, though, unfortunately. So I'll have to report back another time.
I mean, they brought up AIDS.
Yeah, they sure did.
Which Christians I forgot to only even, think like, that gay people in Magic Johnson get. So.
Yeah, the doctor's being like, you know, the normal, do you have AIDS? Yeah.
To Bucky. He said, like, do you have AIDS or anything fun like that? Huh? Again, we know that's not true, but again, this is written by a Christian.
Yes.
And yeah, like we said, this is kind of a very depressing, slow chapter that I think is, you know, let's call it effective.
Yeah.
Him going to the house.
Oh my God.
And seeing all the, like, individual small things. Like,
that makes him know, he knows. I agree with you. I think this is, like, the only, like, kind of good part where I put myself in his shoes. And also, give it up for Jerry Jenkins, because he called the house sepulchral.
Yes.
Which I was like, oh, good vocab. Even in my head,
that was tough to say out loud.
Sepulchral. You know what I mean. Like a grave. So yeah, Ray walks into the spooky house. It smells like burnt coffee because his righteous wife Irene does not even need an alarm to wake her up. All she needs is the smell of decaf coffee that automates one egg in the Christian radio. That's how she wakes up every morning.
And again, I'm using a questionably sourced archival backup. So my shit's always broken up.
Oh, no.
So Bucky's inbox was in space box. Oh. And the way
No, I think it was like that in the real book too. I think there's some weird spelling stuff in it.
Yeah, that's also 1985, so maybe we haven't figured out what's what. But it was like, wait, does she put egg in the percolator and Drinko's her coffee and egg in the morning, her hard coffee boiled egg? But I believe it's just a little fun grammar for
I feel like we actually weren't we like talking about doing this jokingly recently about like cooking the egg in the coffee?
Yeah, like a what are they like? Not a Scotch egg,
like a tea egg. A tea egg. Yeah. No, I just feel like if you drink decaf coffee first thing in the morning, like why? Why are you doing that? I don't get it.
That's what I'm saying. It's like freaking
drink tea. Like, what are you doing? I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't.
Egg? One singular egg.
In my wild days, I freaking drank hard coffee and had two egg, but now I don't.
Down to one. So, yeah. So, Rayford's walking through the spooky house and he's like avoiding going upstairs because he knows what he's going to find up there. Mm-hmm. So, he puts it off. He goes into his son Raimi's room first, which is where we see that he had a signed portrait of himself.
Dude, and Ray was like, I'm a fucking asshole. I suck so bad.
So bad.
And I think that's good, right? In order for us to enjoy, again, though, they're kind of doing it for a different reason, but again, we think that Jenkins is a real one. Sure, he's a huge piece of shit.
I mean, he's probably bad too.
But like, he knows what he's doing. So he knows that he has to kind of convince us that Ray sucks so that we can root for him. And I'm hoping that Ray still has a kissy of grit to it and it's not going to be all Jesus shit going forward, but whatever.
It was pretty funny because this is, again, I actually jumped ahead of myself. He doesn't get into the room at just this point. He's just thinking about Raimi. And it says, Rayford hated himself for his broken promises to spend more time with Raimi.
Damn.
And I'm like, maybe Raimi sucked.
Jennifer.
Maybe he had bad vibes.
Has alone taught us nothing.
I know.
That when you have to think about it, you're like, I didn't tell my family I love them.
Oh, totally. It would be awful. It would be awful. Like, it is, like, the thought of this. And again, The Leftovers very much explores, like, people, like, suddenly being ripped from your life and how you deal with that.
Yeah. No, definitely check out The Leftovers. It's one of the best shows ever made, and it's rough. And it's just, like, a very weird version of this. But we switch over to Bucky again. And since we're in the Bucky, his chapters rule.
They're so weird.
Like, it's just like, hey, would you like some world building, please?
Like, I am thinking about a thing, and I'm thinking about a flashback, and then a different flashback.
Yeah, this one kind of, his flashbacks with his buddy really confused me.
Yes.
And I was like, wait, is this happening? No. Oh, wait. Is this why this is happening? No way.
No, I think I finally got the timeline, like, fully understood.
Right. Because he tells an entire story, and it's like, this was 3 days ago.
Yes.
Like, okay.
But in this part, I believe what is happening is that Bucky is in line, and I don't know if he's, I couldn't tell if he was reading notes from this interview he did with Chaim Rosenzweig, or if he's like watching it on his laptop, dude, like in line.
It sounded like microfiche, because he was like zooming in on his transcribed, like, day's worth of stuff. So I believe it must have been something weird like that.
And it's just that in his mind, he's, like, playing back the conversation. And that's the way it is. Because it was, like, conversational. Like, not, like, notes style.
Exactly. And this felt kind of awkward.
Yes.
Because they had to mention my main man, Nikolai Carpathia.
They had to start to sprinkle in some info on
him.
Because you know, like, okay, it's the fourth chapter. Tell me about the Antichrist.
Who's the bad guy? Which I think is kind of nuts. They could have, like, I guess, sat on it for a little bit longer. I am curious.
They're not brave enough to do that.
Yeah, fair. It's got all the main characters. The new Christians, the Antichrist, you name it.
We got it all. So in this interview, with he's talking to Chaim. Sorry, someone corrected. Excuse me. Chaim. I can't do it correctly if I try really hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard in my throat. So
I was throwing a little on it when we were talking about it. Probably not enough.
But he's having a whole convo with Bucky, and he's like, have you heard of my new best friend, Nikolai Carpathia, from the lower house of the Romanian government?
He's like, I'm a kind of a politics nerd, in that I know who's on the lower house, the Romanian parliament.
Okay, but also, was he negging Bucky? Because I feel like he was kind of negging Bucky.
So, Chaim is a Yoda-like figure throughout these books. He is an absolute weirdo goblin. I kind of forgot which path he, because there's another like Jewish prophet that shows up.
Well, there's two.
Okay,
the two guys. There's a lot.
Yeah, but there's like, well, in my mind, there's one main one.
Okay,
but I'm probably forgetting it.
I think you remember more than me from the series. So.
And I was like, is Chaim that guy? Or the guy with the sword, online conformed,
he's the
guy with the knife. So he's like really goofy, and this really sets up his character.
And he's like doing bits and like making little jokes and like, haha, I'm so humble.
Right.
Like, you're humble just like me.
And it is kind of funny since Bucky does need to eat a kiss of humble pie because he is such a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And he's too good at his goddamn job. And
he's
has like one of the worst stories ever coming
he's
up.
He's under 30 years old, and I just want to.
So Chaim is really able to like dog on him by, you know, hey, I'm making fun of a journalist for not knowing the basic of shit. But the whole point of this story is for us, the reader, to kind of set the stage for Nikolai Carpathia. And I am curious what it was like to read this book when you didn't know that Nikolai Carpathia was the Antichrist.
Right, because the first people who read it wouldn't know that.
Right, and I can't technically access my memories on this, but I could get the vibe that, because I listened to all this on Book on Tape, and I was probably in the back playing with Dragon Ball Z figures or Transformers or something like that, back of the van. So I'm not too sure what I remember, but I could definitely see this is just yet another, like, net full of world building. And sure, of course he's talking about, some dude from Romania.
Yeah. So one thing I thought was interesting is that, Chaim points out that Carpathia is a peacemaker, and he's leading a movement for global disarmament, which, you know, the right-wing Christians were like, disarmament? No, thank you.
That's a good point.
We hate that.
That's actually a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this, I didn't think about it as this was bad, but.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even Rosenzweig was like, yeah, Israel doesn't like that very much either, which that
that's
tracks.
Fair, to be honest, you know.
I mean, yeah, I
Israel does a light apartheid from now and again and constantly, but also I kind of get their fascination with needing to arm themselves. That does make sense. We do live in a global society.
Yeah. So in addition to being all about disarmament, we get this description of Nikolai Carpathia. Tim, can you read this for me, please?
Okay, where do I start?
So this is just a straight up description of him.
Okay. Blonde and blue eyed, like the.
Yeah, that's why I made you read it.
Yeah. This is bad. This one, it's bad and it rules. Blonde and blue eyed, like the original Romanians. I don't want to read it.
Do it. Read it.
Who came from Rome before the Mongols affected their race.
Like, yikes. Whoa, bro, it's bad. You can't say that shit.
I mean, Italians are white by this point. Jenkins, this happened. That's why Columbus Day is a thing.
Before the Mongols affected their race.
What does that mean? Ooh. Is it basically just saying it's not like stereotypical John Stamos?
I guess. Like,
I don't like it.
I don't know, man. It's very no thanks.
No, thank you. This is a yikes from
us. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we're giving it a yikes.
Jenkins, I regret to inform you, I no longer think you're cool.
You've been canceled. Thank you. You made it to chapter 4. you were pretty canceled before, though, because you can't write women at all.
Yeah.
But why does Heim think Nikolai Carpathia is cool?
Pretty straightforward. He speaks a lot of languages.
They go so hard in on the like languages and him memorizing things, which it will come up in the next few chapters. Yeah. It is the funniest shit.
This is the other thing that kind of breaks the quote unquote fourth wall, because they need to go through and checkbox, prophecy shit.
Yeah, exactly. So, he's gotta fit all these things.
So some of these are kind of like vague, some of these are very much like when Russia attacked Israel and, you know, there was lakes of fire
because
all the exploded stuff, like, and they were able to harvest.
Gog and Magog, reference, whatever.
Yes. And thank you to the person who pointed out how Ethiopia was Gog and Magog, one of those two, and that's why it's such a strange group. I forget your Twitter handle, and I do apologize, but I wanted to thank you for pointing that out. It's like, I think that's what basically we assumed, right? Anything that's weird is probably
like Carpathia being from like the Carpathian Mountains or whatever. I'm like, that might be something too. I don't even know.
Yeah, because I think the basic vibe here is this is a way to say he's Aryan without saying he's Aryan, because he's like he's like an original Caucasian from like the Caucasus Mountains, like the same type of vibe, right? So yeah, he speaks a lot of languages. They have this kind of back and forth of Yoda gremlin Heim being like, "What do you want?" Because it was funny because like Heim's like, I've talked to a lot of people. Your own vice president came and talked to me. Wine me, dine me, you know what me. And he's just kind of like so. I just imagine he's had like three, I don't know, wines or whatever, just being silly.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dude, you say like he's the Yoda of this series, like totally unlocked something in my brain. You're so correct.
Yeah.
He's the Yoda. Because he's just like doing little jokes with himself.
Yeah, and he sucks.
And like being like, "Oh, you're weird. That's interesting to me."
Interesting. And yeah, he's like arguably one of the most powerful people on the planet, weirdly.
Yeah.
Due to his big ass brain. So he basically says that like it's weird that Carpathia even gets a moment to talk with him, and they talk about how they just spoke for an hour, and after a while he's like, "All right, Carpathia, what do you want from old Heim?" And Carpathia was just like, "I just want your goodwill."
I'm like, "Yeah, right, bitch."
Yeah.
But he's very charismatic is what I'm hearing from this. People like him. He comes across as very sincere.
So the other thing too is I don't think technically Carpathia is supposed to be that bad until a few big ass things happen to him later down the road.
I think you're 100%.
And then he goes sicko mode.
Yeah.
But,
which I'm very excited about.
Oh, it's such a good part.
I can't wait. It's going to be so cool when we're pulling for the Antichrist.
He doesn't use contractions and he sleeps like an hour a night. I mean, come on.
He's a vampire.
He's a vampire.
Is he Strahd?
In my mind, the movie version of him kind of looks like a slightly more European Ken Jennings. And unfortunately, since I haven't watched the Kirk Cameron? Is that right?
Kirk Cameron. Not Dirk Burton.
Left Behind. I kind of forget what he looks like. So in my mind, it is Ken Jennings just being like, ooh.
Yeah.
Here I am doing a Jeopardy to the UN.
The other thing that's funny in this section is that Han is like, Buck, you must meet Carpathia. You would like each other. Which, yeah, Buck, fair. I think you basically would be liked by the Antichrist.
And I also think this is sort of an ironic foreshadowing.
Totally.
We sure are following the most important characters of these books. And, you know, some of these characters will be on the walls of Jerusalem fighting as the good Lord comes back.
It's going to be fucking sick.
At the end of book 12 or 13 or something like that.
So we finally get to the last bit of Bucky's part in this chapter, which, Tim, is I think where your favorite guy might be alluded to for the first time.
Yes, yes.
So Buck finally gets to the front of the line.
Because he's in line basically at the premier lounge.
Yeah.
Where they're able to, you know, book your rental car, connecting flight, shit like that.
I did like the woman he talks to here. This was like the only like random lady character that shows up that actually seemed like an interesting person.
Yes.
Because she was basically like, what can I not do for you?
Yeah.
when he walks up.
Patty is a trope, and that makes her a character. And technically, her faults just make Rayford and Bucky worse. So even though Hattie's not technically written well, somehow everyone's reaction to her is less a statement on Hattie.
Yeah.
The other thing too is every other female character is bad. So the fact that our parched ass mouths finally get the spitfire.
Yeah. But she puts Buck in contact with a charter pilot and, this is what she says about him. He's expensive, and he's a type who would charge double during a crisis, especially if he knew who you were and how desperate. This dude fucking rocks. He's a shithead. I love this guy. I'm trying to get paid.
I think this is the dude that I like. Or it's not. I assume we're going to meet 37 pilots in the next, you know, 16 chapters. I mean,
Rayford's all his friends, all his pilot connections.
Hey, Rayford, want a martini? Not anymore. I believe in Jesus Christ. I don't know about that.
Okay. Well, speaking of Rayford.
All right, let's go back to Depression Zone.
He's actually walking up the stairs now.
There's a movie by Philip Seymour Hoffman, R.I.P., stars in it. It's called Love, Liza. It's one of those, what I consider like early 2000s, late 90s, just like depressing as shit indie movies
like,
that
isn't
aren't
this
very
just
good.
Sad?
Right.
Aren't you so sad?
Isn't it sad? And it's like the whole plot is his wife died. And let's watch Philip Seymour Hoffman walk around and huff gas.
I mean, that's essentially what happens right here.
Yeah, so that's what this reminded me of. Rayford, instead of huffing gas, he huffs clothes.
He's huffing his wife's flannel nightgown.
Which, as I've always said, always have in a vacuum sealed thing your partner's dirty, but not too dirty. You don't want to be a freak.
Not like stinky sweat, but like they've worn it.
Like their essence is on it. Maybe they rub their deodorant, put their hair on it, you know, things like that. Because at some point, they're going to die.
Yeah, Tim, we probably should get on that. We should like vacuum seal some stuff for each other, just in case.
When we were in college, I remember like we would give you had my hoodie or something.
Yeah,
But do that so that you can have your own rapture experience.
Yeah, so Rayford goes into Raimi's room, which this is where he sees the autographed picture that he gave his son. And he's like, what kind of dad autographs a picture for his own son? Which, great point.
Right, and none of this is trying to defend himself. He's just extremely depressed, beating himself up.
I miss my wife and son.
It's not really leaning into it too hard, meaning it's letting the experience speak for itself at like, it's so much more depressing to see the blinds closed and burnt coffee.
Yeah.
And he has to go through the steps of pouring out the coffee.
Yep.
As opposed to wailing, gnashing.
Yeah.
You know, thinking of not going to Little League and things
like
that.
The like mundane,
exactly.
Like picking up the pieces of it. One other thing that I really loved was the description of Rayford and Irene's bedroom. Because it was such a blast from the past. Because it was like, cross stitch and frills and country stuff. And I'm like, God, that was like such a, like,
right.
I feel like that is exactly what my parents' house and like everyone that I knew.
Totally. Cause
their house looked like that.
This is pre live, laugh, love signs.
Yes. No. This was like that country, like quilt.
Yeah.
Like teddy bears, like cross stitch stuff. It was like such a thing.
Using corks for a picture frame, you know, things like that.
Totally.
So he goes to his bedroom and, you know, he's basically put off going upstairs at all. And so he finally goes upstairs and again sees Raimi's and, you know, points out that, and it's almost even explicitly like, this is what his family does in his absence. Yeah. And now he has to deal with their absence.
Yeah.
Therefore showing in stark relief just how much that affects him. And I think that's actually a really interesting point that they're making. And I hate to give them their flowers here, but like the fact that Rayford is dealing with their absence by having what his absence meant to him.
Yes, yes.
Because Raimi was wearing socks, which is either good or bad. I don't remember which.
Okay, I think I was really confused by that part. And I think that actually what was happening is that Rayford was like kind of laughing because Raimi did have socks on. The socks were left in the bed. And normally his mom would yell at him for not wearing socks to bed. Why would you?
That's queer.
I don't know why you would care either way.
Yeah.
I assumed it must have been like, you'll be cold. You got to wear your socks.
My assumption is the original draft was like Ninja Turtle underpants. Like, we can't talk.
No child underpants.
No, thank you, sir. Then he goes into the bedroom and, you know, it's exactly what you expect. Mm-hmm. It's with a little fun twist. It's Irene's ugly flannel nightgown, her wedding ring, and a locket with him inside.
And it's the flannel nightgown that she only wears when he's not around because he thinks it's ugly or bad or something.
Right.
Embarrassing.
And at some point earlier, he acquired a frickin' package because Irene, of course, sends him packages.
Such a good wife.
And
this is some Love Dare shit right here. Like, I don't know when that came out, but it's extremely like I went to a Christian wives class and yes. It told me to mail my husband cookies. Yeah.
Irene through this entire thing has extreme, I don't have a job. So my rich ass pilot husband just allows me to decorate and put bears on things.
Yeah. And like I'm that, trapped in my fucking horrible home and, going to church. And that's all I do.
And, he opens up the package and inside are two, cookies with hearts on them. And he basically describes that between, the scent of her pillow and like the wedding ring is where she would rest her hand to prop up her neck and the waft of the cookies. Breaks down and falls asleep crying. And it's probably like 5, 6, 7 p.m., give or take.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think
I feel
it's
sad for him.
It's an effective chapter.
It is an effective chapter.
Or the Ray parts are effective.
Yeah.
Buck is just like, God, can you please stop putting all the fucking backstory on me? It sounded like such an asshole. It's like, don't worry, your next chapter is going to be way worse.
Yeah, guys, the thing about Chapter 5 is that Rayford is barely in it.
The thing about Chapter 5 is it's so confusing it sucks.
It's really
it's
insane.
It's so good. So, Chapter 5.
We start out with finding out that Buck is carrying several $1,000s worth of traveler's checks in a special pocket in his jeans?
I mean,
what?
Yeah, I mean, this...
this is my traveler's check pouch. Okay, think about the jeans he'd be wearing in 1995.
Oh, my God,
they're,
dude.
Like, up so high.
Oh, my God, dude. He rocks. he's perfect, and I can't imagine...
What other pouches does he have in those jeans?
This is my cyanide pill pocket.
Yeah, this is my razor blade pouch.
This is my jerky sack.
This is for all my fake passports, which I think he actually does have fake passports.
Yeah, Bucky's cool. Yeah, again, they kind of... I have no idea what they're trying to accomplish with describing Bucky. I would love to go back in time and like, did this work for anybody?
I think they think that people will like this, but didn't you used to like it at the time?
I remember liking Bucky.
I didn't think he was bad at the time. I definitely didn't. Like, I think I was all like, ooh, like,
because,
yeah, exactly. Like,
well, he's always a step ahead, and his whole, like, even his, I don't check a bag, even though I'm to London from New York, or from New York to Chicago to London, and I'm meeting my friend Dirk Burton, who maybe... will take me to the Antarctic. So
we don't. Who knows?
I have like a messenger bag filled with $30,000, three pairs of clothes that I wash in the sink like a weirdo, and somehow cold weather gear too. I didn't really dig down deep into it because I was like,
"Who cares?" I'm gonna need to see a diagram of this.
The way they do Napoleon's French Revolutionary War soldiers carried all these things, and that's what I want to see. I want to see it. Like, here's his hardtack. Trench knife.
I think that Buck just makes me really mad because he's just such a type of guy that, like, I probably went to, like, grad school with.
I'm just
always going on trips, and I'd always travel. I'd only bring three pairs of, you know, changes of clothes or whatever. Yeah. I'm like, shut up.
The one time that, like, baggage is delayed, like, that's why I never check a bag. Always, because I was inconvenienced once. Hey,
wow.
Sorry, bud. I'm able to bring my Xbox 360 home now because of that.
Idiot.
Fuck off.
So we immediately get a flashback, like, right after they're like, Buck has several thousand dollars worth of travel checks in his pants. We then get a flashback to only a few days ago. I think this was like 3 days previously.
Yeah, we don't find out it's 3 days previously until the end of this entire story.
It's very confusing. So for some reason, well...
Okay, yeah. No, this story is so confusing.
And, like, why? Why is this in here? So apparently Buck scooped the Chicago branch of the Global Weekly on a sports story.
Right.
Like, in
one of the biggest, like, sport towns in America.
So he has to go and make nice with the bureau chief in Chicago.
Lucinda Washington, who's black, by the way.
And they do this a couple times, because in the previous chapter, I didn't bring it up there, but they were talking about when Rayford is in the car with a lady hitchhiking, and she's like, this Chinese girl who I know is also gone from your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like, did you mean to say that? They, like, don't say it. They only say it to be like, this person's not white.
Right.
And it really stands out.
Right, because this is before you was like, Lucinda Washington, she had... Her skin was brown, by, you know, her hair was like this.
Yeah, yeah, but no, they're like, she's black.
She's black.
She's middle-aged. She's a black woman. And she's a Christian,
They have this, like, kind of fun back and forth.
Yeah.
The insane story of Buck scooping it sucks. But I think maybe technically we're supposed to see that he's bad because of this. But again,
like, he's
super
selfish,
curious
I guess.
What the point is.
See, I don't even know. Like, I didn't take it as, I thought it was like, the book being like, he's got gumption. He's always scooping everyone.
Right,
what a wunderkind.
Because he does say, I wouldn't have scooped you guys if you're doing your job. That being said, this is one of those things that I think adults can see as objectively annoying.
Yeah.
And, like, he didn't even tell her about it. And,
no.
Because he was like, well, then you would have given it to someone else. And it's like, bro, you're already the Buck. Who cares?
Why are you doing this?
Why are you doing this?
And he also calls her, like, Lucy. Like, he always does that. Like, he, like, tries to get, like, personal and cute. And I personally, like, maybe this is a me thing. I hate when people do that shit.
Yeah.
When they, like, just, I don't know, act super familiar when we don't know each other. Like, that is, that there's nothing more that will make me be like, cool, I'm never going to talk to you again.
And I think that the whole point of her being black, other than hashtag diversity, is he gets to have a quick joke about, she makes fun of him for being Ivy League.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm surprised you're even, like, able to do X, Y, Z. And he's like, did you stereotype me?
Oh, my God.
Both go,
oh, so funny.
We're both the same. It's equal to
dude,
do.
Honestly, I think you might be right. That is, like, I feel like they wanted to make that joke, and they just created her.
Jenkins, like, shuffling into his kitchen, bothering his wife. That's funny, though, right? That's, like, good, though, right?
So, yeah, the only thing that's important in this section is that you find out that Lucinda's a Christian.
She's a Christian.
We'll come back to that.
And she kind of makes fun of him. Does she inherently say, like, I'll be gone one day or something like that?
Kind of. I think she kind of alludes
to it. That's what I'm saying. Like, all these people say, like, all point out that there's going to be a rapture and I'll be gone. Get ready for it. And, yes... There is the bumper sticker of, like, in case of rapture, this car will be empty. But besides that, it wasn't at least in my circles.
Did you not ever, like, meet a person that was like, oh, how are you doing? Like, oh, like, I'm doing okay, but I'll be doing better when the Lord comes. Like,
that happened.
I feel like that was, like, people would always be talking about, like, God, Sorry, our rice cooker just went off and scared me in the background. I think that people would do that, like, be looking forward to the rapture in the same way that I jokingly talk about when is first contact going to happen and when are the Vulcans going to come save us.
Yeah, and I brought this up before, not because I don't think it never happened. It's just, it feels like it's extremely happening in this book,
yeah.
And especially if it was happening pre Rapture.
Right. Now,
post-rapture, it kind of makes sense because they're focusing on the things he said.
Like, we got to save everybody.
But typically, you know, it's the joke isn't, well, I'll be gone one day. It's, well, you'll be in hell. That being said, I guarantee I've made the joke before and every other Christian has too. I'm just saying it's clunky.
Yeah.
Not that it never happened.
I'm very curious, the listeners, like, did you grow up around people or were you around people who were constantly talking about the rapture in their lives? Let us know.
Yeah.
I'm curious about it.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think I cut out from the first episode, a slightly too long story about my my best friend's dad who was obsessed with the rapture. So he was the type of guy that would always bring it up.
So, okay, within this flashback, we now get an even farther back flashback.
So confusing.
trying to figure
out what's happening.
But, Tim, we get to meet Dirk Burton.
And I, when I read this, I was like, oh, like Jennifer's nicknames that she has a list of.
Yeah.
Forgetting that you've been reading
D&D.
Left Behind for like 2 years.
Yeah, so I played a D&D rogue named Dirk Burton because Dirk Burton sounds hilarious, but Dirk Burton sounds even funnier.
I just thought it was a coincidence.
I think that I'm probably going to be taking a lot of D&D names from Left Behind. What if I just named a D&D character Nikolai Carpathia?
That'd be good.
I want that.
A great
warlock. I'm going to do it now.
In a Abyss Warlock, totally.
Yes.
So Dirk Burton went to Yale with him?
Yeah, I think they went to school together.
He's Welsh, by the way.
Yeah, he's Welsh, by the way, and he works in the financial sector.
And they kind of paint him as a sort of, a kind of fun conspiracy guy while not being super conspiracy guy.
Right, right.
But again, I think the point of this is to show that Buck is all science, all facts.
Exactly. Well, and also, going into conspiracy theory alert, woo. We start to get there here because it's all like, oh, this person that Buck is like, he's a conspiracy theorist. Actually, it turns out he's right.
Well, actually, turns out he is right, everybody. The Bohemian Grove, let me tell you.
Dude,
about it.
I was like, we haven't gotten there yet. But basically, why is his name?
Dirk Burton.
Dirk Burton. Like, I feel like Tim and I will just say Dirk Burton.
If you
sometimes.
Don't have Dirk Burton, just like,
in your
if
head.
If you're at a stoplight, just mutter Dirk Burton. You're going to have a better day.
Yeah, just think about it. Think about Dirk Burton. But he has contacts with movers and shakers in the financial and political world.
His boss is somehow part of the Illuminati.
Yes.
So occasionally he gets hot tips, and we are getting essentially Dirk's first big ass hot tip to Buck. It's implied that there's other ones here and there, but whatever, he could have been right or wrong. But it's sort of hard to tell when this is happening, but the basic deal is Dirk predicted that they went down to 3 currencies, and I really wish I knew that was what was happening when I was reading this, because I thought this was like after the 3 currencies and this was going to 1 currency.
Yeah, no.
Because the conspiracy theory that Dirk is saying is that we are moving to 1, we're consolidating.
We're right. Yeah, because basically Dirk calls Buck up like, hey, I got a scoop, you can do whatever you want with it, but these movers and shakers that I have an eye on, they're all meeting, and I know that it's about world currency stuff, and we're going to go down to 3.
They're going to go do cocaine, they're going to suck each other's dicks, eat
like,
babies.
They talk about, like, they basically, these important people, and sometimes involving, like, presidents and such, meet in a chalet in France, which I thought was very funny.
They go to Jeffrey Epstein's French grotto.
Yeah, it's giving Bohemian Grove for sure. It's giving the Koch Brothers Summit.
Do you think they did that on purpose, or did they pick something out of a hat they thought was...
I don't know. I actually was looking it up, because here's the thing. And this is what drives me crazy about this topic and just, like, right-wing people in general. Is like, well, you're a little bit right in that, like, yes, a small minority of people are affecting the world. But it's not like this. But, like, the Koch brothers literally would put on like a summit and like all the important people will go like, this stuff does happen.
Yeah.
But it's not the way they're saying it.
Totally. Yeah. Cause he, like throughout his sort of back and forths, he's basically saying that this group decides policy. This group changes.
Yeah.
The stock market. He makes a reference to like, well, if your president is sick, then the stock market changes, right? Well, think of that, but deeper. Which, you know, Jenkins is a hashtag ally. The stock market's fucking fake.
Well, it's fake. Yeah, exactly.
And it's weird ass gambling controlled by billionaire pedophiles that meet in frickin' France, allegedly.
In a chalet.
Allegedly. But yeah, so he's basically saying, okay, it was either the pound or the Deutschmark got cut out, but
it was like a pound. It's gonna be the mark
because the metric system fucking sucks.
They have a whole conference. Well, basically, I did love because Dirk is like making fun of Americans for not wanting to switch to metric, and he's correct for that.
He is correct. And at this point, I did have to change my internal monologue to be, I don't know what Welsh sounds like, but I just went straight up like English, and that was fun.
It's funky English. I really the Welsh accent is great. Yeah, I like it.
I only hear good things. But basically he says, soon take my tip or not, but if this happens, you know I was right.
Yeah.
And he's kind of saying that these people are meeting and one person is pushing for everyone to switch the dollar.
Yeah.
And then we get the fact, or like Bucky seeing when this world of the Left Behind series moves to three currencies, and Buck's like, fuck. All right, my man, Dirk, whenever you need me, let's fucking go.
Yeah, so basically that's the whole thing. And at the beginning of the book, that's where Buck was flying to London to meet with Dirk Burton.
Dirk called him in the middle of the fucking night.
To be like, get your ass
here. Hey, come over here. And so Bucky is like, all right.
I gotta go.
My crazy friend Dirk Burton, he loves to have the craziest times. I'll bring all my passports, $18,000 in untraceable bills.
That are in my pants.
Amphetamines to bribe my way out of jail. And a jacket. And he just goes there. And then, unfortunately, the rapture happens.
So the other thing that we find out in this section is that Dirk says that the real power behind the power is an American guy named Jonathan Stonegal, which, let me just say, I immediately got very stressed and was like, is Stonegal a Jewish last name? It's not, though. I think he might have made it up, because when I looked up just Stonegal, Only Left Behind stuff came out. And that's where I found the fan fiction, by the way.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
I'm curious if what they're going for with this, but I don't remember anything about Stonegal. I assume he gets killed soon.
So the way that Dirk describes him is that he not only owned the biggest banks and financial institutions in the United States, but he also owned or had huge interests in the same throughout the world. Oh no, it's a new world order, the Illuminati, the Cabal.
Sorry, base Left Behind. It's just true.
They're fucking right.
They're just right.
And the other important person that comes up, and this is Dirk's connection to the shadowy group, is Joshua Todd Cawthron, which you know he's a heathen. He's got a hyphenated last name.
I also know what this guy's deal is. I'm excited for Nikolai Carpathia to, I don't know, execute him.
Choke him out? Later. I don't know.
I have no idea.
He's going to kill him like Darth Vader.
But I assume Carpathia in book five just like clears house on some of these toadies, and I'm very excited.
We do a quick cut to Rayford, which this only section is just like Rayford wakes up from his grief sleep because the phone is ringing. Oh, it's Hattie, and Rayford's like, oh, I don't fucking care about you anymore. And she's like, please call me again. And he's like, we'll see.
It's interesting because he's very short with her, but in a little bit, I was like, what's his deal? Not what's his deal, but like, what is the deal for which I'm supposed to be reading into this? But yet again, he's just saying, I can't believe I was thinking with my huge dick.
My huge non-Christian hog.
Yeah. My beautiful circumcised Chicago hog. And luckily this time, they're not demeaning to Hattie. When he's like, I don't even want to fuck her anymore.
Yeah.
But
he's just like so rude about it. He's just basically like, she's a vapid, like silly little girl. And actually we find out how old she is. It says she's 27.
Not as young as I expected.
I thought she was going to be younger than that, actually.
Yeah, especially for, all of this, like 27 unmarried. Yikes.
Wow. Old maid much?
Well, that's why she's left behind.
Oh, because, yeah.
But that being said,
if she was a good girl, she'd be married and have children.
That is true. I do agree with that. All that to say is, like, it's a little weird, but it's also kind of like, well, of course, he just woke up from the world's worst nap on the planet.
And Hattie is a little bit like, you didn't call me. And he's like, bitch, my wife and child are gone. Which is like, okay, fair enough. Like, yeah.
And is this the part where, one of these moments, I forget where, we do get confirmation that every single baby is gone, including, as the podcast agrees, the babies in bellies.
They got it. You know they got sucked right out of there.
Oh my god. There's gonna be there. If there's not a story of someone that like was checking their pregnancy test and then their baby disappeared.
And then it went away. Right. They became unpregnant.
Because has to be a compromat basically saying baby is abortion.
Well, they already did the thing where they showed the woman that was like in labor and her belly went away.
But like I was saying, she was in labor.
Right. So pre-labor.
Was that since the gates vagina was opening, does that mean that baby got raptured?
So wait, real quick though, I have a question again. Going back to the whole conversation about babies being in heaven before they're born.
Oh my god, yeah.
So according to...
I feel like we've talked about this a lot over our many years.
Have we? I feel like...
Or like it's come up before.
My brain must have rejected this because it's like, it's so silly to me.
I'm sure.
But like, does she think that the babies are in heaven until they're conceived, and then they're in
my stepmom?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, the second they're conceived, then their essence goes into there, or are they still, their spirit's still chilling in heaven until they shoot out?
So it feels like there is, like, baby trees. This is just my flavor, and...
We're gonna have to sneakily get clarification on this.
I was talking to my sister one time, and I was like, as a joke, a Patreon tier is, I talk to my dad and stepmom, but I'm like, no.
It will have to be...
You'd have to give me
so many
$80,000.
Yeah, it's like, this will ruin your relationship with your parents.
I could do it respectfully. I could not.
No.
It feels like there's a frickin'...
Primordial is.
A bank vault of baby souls, and
is it like in Anastasia and like the ghost, the spirits are like all flying around?
I haven't seen that. I in my mind, it's very Cabbage Patch where they grab
you go pick them.
Jesus picks your baby and he throws it football style down and it hits your goddamn womb. That's how I took it. I'm filling in every single point between. You were a baby in heaven.
Yeah. I'm fascinated.
And now you're born.
I'm going to look into this more. Not what people think. I actually want to know about this.
Well, her mom did get very much like, you have to baptize kids or else they'll go to hell.
That's very interesting.
And my dad and my stepmom, i.e. her daughter, like, No.
Yeah, evangelicals are not weird about that. They're just like, no, they're babies. It'll be fine.
Yeah, but what
when you're like five and understand, then you'll go to hell.
You have to go to a Carmen concert like everyone else.
you gotta get baptized in front of everybody in the church and see a bug in the water and feel really weird about it. That's what happened to
me. That's funny. Yeah. I thought you were gonna ask, what is heaven like for a baby? And
did you just say infinitely a baby?
Well, this is why in Twilight you're not allowed to make baby vampires.
A baby vampire is very fucked up.
The Volturi will get you.
Just like a baby zombie is also very fucked up.
And that's why I think we just assume they turn into a guy or something. But
they grow up.
But
they,
maybe we should.
I don't know.
We definitely need to have a conversation list of like. Eventually, we're gonna have to have bonus episodes where it's we take an edible and we talk about these topics.
Yes. So, anyway, Rayford's sad, whatever. We're done with him. We go back to Buck, and he was able to get to the payphone to call Kenrith.
Who's my man, or he isn't.
The cool shithead charter pilot.
Or he's not. Well, he is a shithead
charter pilot. He is a cool shithead charter pilot. And
I actually got really mad at this point because... Well, I kind of get what Ken's doing because he runs private.
Yeah, he's like, man, I gotta get paid.
But like everyone else is like price gouging, and like of course price gouging.
That's what would happen though, yeah. Because
it sent me down a quick spiral.
Remember the beginning of the pandemic when people were like hoarding fucking masks,
yeah.
And like hand sanitizer and
shit. Toilet paper. Or when we're recording this, why fucking gas prices are so high?
Oh my god.
No real reason.
Yeah.
It's just because there's a war and they can do it.
And they can. So, yeah, so Ken's gonna get paid, which who cares?
Because
Buck's money is coming from the newspaper. Who gives a fuck? Buck then checks in with Hattie. She cries some more on the phone. She's always crying on the phone.
And which I did like, because when Hattie is on the phone with Ray, she gets a phone call.
Then we cut over and I didn't put that together.
It's very Games of Thrones to me.
Wow.
And I've also decided that George R. R. Martin read Left Behind, like, this is the shit.
I can do this better.
This whips.
I gotta add a lot more gore and sex and fucked up stuff.
A little more incest. It's basically the same book.
Yeah.
I wonder if the microphone picked up our cat.
Laser, don't be mad just because you're going to hell, too.
There's not a lot of interesting thing about Hattie on the phone other than they're setting the seeds for future plot points, meaning they're gonna talk to each other.
And Hattie's, like, sad and, like, call me again. She's so lonely. She's so thirsty.
And they do make a point of Buck being like, I'm not even thinking about fucking her, which is hilarious. Boys and girls cannot be friends.
No, they always want to fuck each other.
But I think this is maybe where we get the confirmation about the baby thing.
I think so, yeah, because she asks about, like, his family.
Oh, is she the one that says all the innocents are gone? Or is that Margot Potter or whatever her name is?
She said that
someone says it.
She says that kids and nice people are gone.
Yeah.
And Hattie also, it does come up with Hattie as well, where she's like, oh. Like, basically she realized, like, she kind of, like, realized, he's like, oh, just my nephews. She's like, how old are they? Like,
yeah.
10. And she's like, oh. So she doesn't, like, fully straight up say, like, your niece and nephew are gone.
Right.
But she knows.
Yeah. And then it's all that stuff of, like, well, if you have relatives of this age, of course they're gone. That's starting to sink in. And then we get, like, one of the darkest, like, fucked up things.
So remember Lucinda Washington? Mm-hmm. Well, this is, like, the only real reason why I think she got brought up. Buck calls her, and who picks up the phone?
Her son.
Her teenage son. And, guys, turns out Lucinda and all her family, except for her teen son, got snatched away into heaven.
He's just tall enough to ride this roller coaster to hell. I was super nervous until he was like, no, my pastor's here, or something like that.
He's just totally wrong. But that happened. Like, in this scenario.
Oh, my God.
That would happen.
Oh, my God.
Which brings up another point that I thought about while reading this, which is that elementary schools, completely useless.
Out of jobs.
They're completely out of jobs. Like, completely empty elementary schools. Like, it's like creepy.
What do I do? Yeah, yeah. All the Toys R Us kids, Gap kids,
useless.
What
the fuck are we going to do with this now? Oh my God, I didn't think about that.
Well, it's a lot of lost jobs, but they also need a lot of people to take new jobs. Like, can you be an air traffic controller?
Please.
I'm a second grade art teacher. Good, get in there.
But, like, yeah, all those clothes and toys for nothing.
No,
until they start having more babies.
Well, they have a huge excess of clothes because everyone left theirs behind. I think this kid might show up in the Left Behind Kids book. I'm not sure. But I also believe this is how we start closing the frickin' world, where I think this is we'll connect Buck and Rayford again.
Yes.
Maybe.
The other thing that happens in this chapter, which to me is, like, iconic of, like, Left Behind style Rapture, is the kid talks about his dad's contacts being, like, laying on top of his clothes. Cause it's like, basically, the way it was always explained to me, is like, any, like, additional thing that's not, like, your actual, like, flesh and blood is gonna get left behind. So if you have, like, a hearing aid or, like, you know, a stent
dick piercing
in your, like a piercing, your wedding ring, or your contacts out of your eyeballs. You know what? Oh my God, I just thought of a horrible thing. All the tampons that got left behind.
Ew, gross.
And the pads. What if someone was wearing a butt plug and they got taken up to heaven?
My wife is full. Plug? Why are there four butt anal beads? What are these? Yeah, no, I mean, there is another, I have no idea what it is, but there's, like, other media about the Rapture where it's not gross like Left Behind. Oh, their clothes are folded because
they're folded neatly.
The Lord is nice.
No, and Left Behind, they're just a crumpled pile.
That's the end of chapter 5 and the end of our very third episode. Thank you so much for listening. We are still taking it quote unquote slow.
There's a lot to dig into. Fact that we've done 3 episodes and like literally in every chunk there's like a weird conspiracy theory thing that comes up. Like
eventually we're gonna have to start doing more chapters, but for the beginning we definitely wanted to kind of get our voice and try to figure out what they're doing, because we don't want to be doing this show for 30 years.
That might kill me actually.
I don't know how to solve that, but you know, eventually we want, like we've hinted at, definitely want to have ways to have bonus episodes and you know, exclusive content.
But the thing is, the story's so batshit that we gotta lead listeners along through it.
So true.
To explain what the hell's going on.
Eventually, the episode is just going to be simply 3 hours long.
Yeah, it might have to be.
Because a lot of times with podcasting, it's simply scheduling.
Yeah.
So if you just get on the books, that means nothing else is in your way. Like, therefore, if I record for 3 hours,
then it's fine.
It's fine. Exactly. Eat a cheese stick in the middle of it. Yeah. Do you got any? You got anything you want to lift up?
Oh man, anything I'm gonna lift up to the Lord? I don't know. Nothing specific, I don't think. I don't know.
Other than the heat, of course.
Other than the heat, I would like it to be lifted away. I mean, I was just thinking, I was like, I'm sure there's like things that I should be like, donate money here, or do whatever. I don't know, man. Everything's bad. Do what you can, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just went through quick kaleidoscope vision of like, oh wait, I thought there was specific one thing we should donate to. There's so many. Yeah, you know, very important, you know, not gonna get preachy, but obviously, take care of your communities. That's the biggest ways that you can, affect positive real world change, from things of, making sure QAnon folks don't become the head of your school board, or your sheriff, or
and they're absolutely trying to. So be aware in whatever elections you're able to vote in, and because those lower level ones, people are getting in there. Yep. Believe this that we're talking about for real.
I'm not a resistance lib, so I'm not going to annoy you about the only way to fix things is vote, because I don't believe that.
No, I think actually community, actually what's going on in your community, or they're like, food banks, or there are things you can, you know, funds that you can donate for reproductive health stuff.
Yeah, because I think in our minds, we wouldn't feel right doing the show necessarily, because without pointing stuff out like this, because it is so tied into it. It's not just, you know, being leftist creators. It's literally, this is not obviously the seeds of all this stuff, but it is a fertilizer.
It's a fertilizer. That's a great way to describe it. Yes, it was a an extreme fertilizer to it. Yeah. So it, I mean, this stuff, again, like the whole weird conspiracy theory shit, like this is exactly what QAnon people are saying. Like, this
is all true.
It's why it was so easy for them to just slide into this. Mm-hmm. So I encourage folks to examine.
Right. It's fun. It's easy and fun to laugh at it, but it is occasionally, we won't do it every episode, but it's worthwhile to realize it has real world connotations.
I actually do have something to lift up.
Let's lift it up.
So talking about, you know, Illuminati and the movers and shakers in the world, may I recommend a book called Dark Money? And
no.
I believe it is by, let me find
do
it.
Do not read any book that Jennifer
recommends. No, you have to. You do. You need to. It's, you're going to feel worse afterward, like for sure. But read Dark Money, The Hidden History of the Billionaires Behind the Rise of the Radical Right by Jane Meyer. It's a great book. You will be depressed after you read it. But
sick.
It's good to know.
Well, going a little long, so just follow us on Twitter. I'm at Tim Lanning. Jennifer is at Jennifer Cheek. I occasionally post on Instagram at Tim Lanning. You don't really do Instagram.
Post very much on Instagram. No.
You should.
We'll see. I don't know.
Okay. Well, love you, and peace to you and yours.
Thank you. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.